Your Humanities Half Hour is brought to you by the Northern Marianas Humanities Council.
Welcome to Your Humanities Half Hour. I'm Catherine Perry. Today we'll be hearing from our final speaker from the one-day conference Cultures in War, Combatants, Islanders, and Settlers in the Pacific War and Afterward. This conference was held on June 14, 2014, in conjunction with the 70th anniversary of the battles of Saipan and Tinian. Our speaker today is Robert R. Clement Jr., an assistant professor of history and Micronesian studies at the University of Guam. He holds a BA in history and a PhD in Pacific history from the University of Hawaii at Manoa. He also holds an MA in Micronesian studies from the University of Guam. Clement's work has focused on political and cultural history in post-World War II Guam. His paper is entitled Militarization and Music: Stories of Cross-Cultural Encounters in Guam and Saipan During World War II and the Early Post-War Years. An underexamined aspect of World War II and its immediate aftermath is the impact that the tens of thousands of military men who passed through the island had on the cultures of the Marianas. For many Northern Mariana Islanders, these GIs were the first introduction to American culture. On Guam, the sheer scale of the military presence ensured fundamentally different dynamics between locals and military personnel than had existed under pre-war naval rule. Among the significant cultural influences that came with these men was Armed Forces Radio, which gave islanders unprecedented access to American music. Through radio, but also through live performances at formal and informal settings, this music played a role in bridging cultural divides and becoming an aspect of life on the island that GIs and islanders shared. From a local perspective, the music of the military represented America, but in fact, it was less a representative snapshot of American music than it was a snapshot of the musical culture of the U.S. military. The music had a profound impact on the sounds of the islands for decades to come, leaving a legacy of Chamorro and Carolina music which continues to bear the marks of the early post-war years. Here now is Robert R. Clement Jr.
Buenas and hafade. And yes, I did want to thank the Humanities Council for putting this great conference together. I studied the history of Chamorro music, a history that is characterized by a continual incorporation of foreign musical ideas. In hearing about this conference and its title, which very appropriately extends the idea of cultures in war into the period of World War II's aftermath, and I started to think about how so much of post-war Chamorro culture and music is rooted in the cultural milieu of these years, or those years. The song I just started with is Michael Aguanya's 1973 version of the Hank Snow's song from 1952 called Married by the Bible. It exemplifies the way Chamorros use songs to express dissatisfaction with social change that came in post-war Guam. He uses a country song about secularism, social breakdown, and the decline of Christian values to make a Chamorro song that complains about the breakdown of costumbre in Chamorro. I've come to see how the proliferation of Chamorro renditions of early post-World War II American country songs in modern Chamorro music provides a window into the experiences of Chamorros whose lives had been transformed by war, its aftermath, and the multicultural environment that shaped cultural change going forward. Chamorro country songs have received little attention in post-World War II Chamorro cultural history. I believe that it is because they don't seem to fit into the dominant narratives that shape current understandings of post-World War II Guam. The three decades following World War II were a period of rapid modernization and Americanization, and of the marginalization of Chamorro language in Guam's public sphere. On the surface, it may seem that the Chamorro love of American country music affirms this, but it is important to note that there was never a time when Chamorros were not also translating these American country songs, replacing lyrics with ones that had more culturally specific meanings, and sometimes even using country songs as platforms to criticize Americanization and modernization. I've come to understand that despite common associations between a people's music and cultural nationalism, the Chamorro embrace of American music is, like such as country, cannot be completely understood within a nationalist or patriotic framework. I make the case that one must begin with the trauma of the massive physical, economic, political, and demographic transformation of the islands that began when American forces returned to the Marianas in the summer of 1944. For Chamorros on Guam, the return of American forces was a time of jubilation and intense gratitude for liberation from an oppressive Japanese occupation. In the former Japanese mandates, the expulsion of Japan was greeted with ambivalence. Nevertheless, neither Chamorros on Guam nor Chamorros in the Marianas were American citizens yet, and they were not treated as such by the military. All Chamorros began the new American era with confinement in refugee camps. On Guam, it would be months, and for some more than a year, until the military resettled Chamorros into newly constructed villages wedged between newly constructed military bases. In Saipan, Chamorros and Carolinians were confined to refugee camps until 1946. For all the immediate post-war years were a traumatic time of displacement and of uncertainty about the future. Vast areas of the islands were seized to make way for runways and Quonset huts, and in Guam, militarization continued to transform the landscape for years after the war, as the island became a permanent military fortress. If, as noted by scholars such as Robert Underwood and Ben Blas, the war reaffirmed indigenous identity by sharpening distinctions between islander and outsider, the summer of 1944 marked the beginning of an unprecedented onslaught of American culture of a particularly militarized variety, which would begin to blur distinctions between Chamorros and Americans. In Guam, 205,000 military personnel would be stationed on the island that year, and tens of thousands more would pass through the Northern Marianas. As late as 1948 on Guam, the military still outnumbered civilians 68,000 to 25,000. And to this number were added as many as 10,000 civilian laborers, recruited from the Philippines and the United States, mostly from Texas. In Saipan, the military drawdown was more rapid, but the military would reassert control with the establishment of the Naval Technical Training Unit in the early 1950s. The sustained American presence would reshape the economy away from agricultural subsistence towards cash employment and economic dependence. When one speaks of music and war in Guam, it is usually the Japanese occupation and the moment of liberation that comes to mind. In fact, that is the only period in Guam history for which music has entered into historical and sociological analysis. Liberation on Guam is told as the story of a united Chamorro population that for 2 years and 9 months had pinned their hopes on the American return. Wartime songs of resistance expressed loyalty to the United States at all costs, and no song better exemplifies this sense of loyalty than the English language song, "Sam, Sam, My Dear Uncle Sam, Won't You Please Come Back to Guam?" Other stories of songs shed light on the moment of liberation itself. War survivor Joe Guerrero recalls breaking into "Happy Days Are Here Again" as Marines let him out of Manengan. A woman named Miss Miller reportedly sang "Let Me Call You Sweetheart" during the same trek. Similarly, Silvina Charferis Tamomoa, suffering from rickets, rode with her infant brother, Victor Charferis Cruz, in their uncle's caribou cart to the American camp at Finili Agat. And she recalled the hillside rang out with a combination of Catholic Chamorro hymns and American songs like "Tenting on the Old Campground," "Just Before the Battle, Mother," "When Johnny Comes Marching Home," "God Bless America," and "My Country Tis of Thee." After settling at the Agat camp, Tamomoa was in the constant company of GIs who maintained the camps and often entertained the Chamorro children. She recalled learning to read by singing songs in the GI songbook, such as "Rock of Ages," "On the Old Rugged Cross," and other popular hymns and Southern folk songs. Such stories of music clearly express loyalty to the United States and a recognition that Guam's future was tied to America. But I also agree with Robert Underwood and Vicente Diaz's views that Chamorro appropriation of patriotic symbolism regarding the war can mask a subaltern, more inwardly focused Chamorro experience. American music in general seems to have been embraced on Guam because it was a symbol that the war was over and that as a community, Chamorros had survived. My own research has focused more on the music that expresses the experiences of Chamorros after that moment of liberation, as Chamorros began to adapt to the permanent economic, social, demographic, and political transformations of the Marianas. These islands were transformed during these years to meet the needs of the military, and one of those needs was entertainment. The first step in this direction was the establishment of Armed Forces Radio. The first AFRS station in the Mariana was WXLD KSI in Saipan, which began broadcasting in June of 1944 out of a tent using a mix of American and Japanese equipment. On Guam, the Armed Forces radio station WXLI Guam began broadcasting in October. An interesting aspect of AFRS during these years is that because of a musician strike in the United States between 1942 and 1944, no new music was made available to domestic audiences. Record companies did, however, allow artists to record on what became known as V-discs, which were only available to AFRS. Chamorros therefore heard the new releases of artists such as the Andrew Sisters, Perry Como, Bing Crosby, Tommy Dorsey, and dozens of others before it was even available to mainland audiences. It was also through these V-discs that a new wave of American country artists got their first international exposure through shows such as Melody Roundup, National Barn Dance, and AFRS Ranch House. I thought it was interesting, basically because of what I'm talking about later on, that this cartoon depiction, I don't know if you can really see it, but the bottom on top of that that record, it says Great Speckled Bird, which is a Roy Acuff song from the time that would eventually be transformed by other country artists into a battle of the sexes between Hank Thompson and Kitty Wells. So some of you may be familiar with those songs. Radio was far from the only entertainment, however. USO shows brought some of the United States' most successful stars into the Marianas, where they entertained crowds of thousands. Movie houses, bars, and nightclubs sprung up everywhere on Guam. During the early post-war years, the military put considerable effort into keeping the different components of Guam's society segregated. Military, civil service, Filipino laborers, and Chamorros all faced restrictions on movement around the island. For this reason, places like the village of Asan became important as a mixing zone between Chamorro populations surrounding bombed-out Agaña and sailors stationed at naval installations in the Upper Harbor area. Asan would be the site of the Asan Point Civil Service Center, as well as numerous locally owned restaurants and bars. Even with the seemingly strict segregation, boundaries were often crossed. Chamorros, after all, worked as civilian employees on the bases in various capacities, including as musicians in bars and nightclubs. Military personnel also found ways to bring Chamorro women to these clubs as dates. Sometimes these cross-cultural encounters were supported by the military establishment. Christina DeLau has written, for example, of how even before the USO established a foothold on Guam, prominent Chamorro leader Agata Johnson recruited busloads of beautiful women who performed Chamorro stick dances, Polynesian hula, and Chamorro renditions of Andrew Sisters and Shirley Temple. A niece of Johnson recalled stories, apparently from later in the 1940s, of how Johnson would escort groups of young Chamorro women to the officers' clubs so that the guys could dance with the girls. A related perspective on the way boundaries in Guam's segregated society were easily crossed comes from local musician Jimmy Ferranti, who recalled that back in 47, he and then CB, but later Guam business mogul Ken Jones, were the Jitterbug Kings when jazz bands played at Harmon Bay, on Friday and Saturday nights. He explained in an interview that we would send armed guards to the villages to pick up the young ladies for the dances. The music of the era was, of course, big band swing, and the dance was the jitterbug. The era left a legacy of rhythm and a dance that remained part of the Chamorro celebrations for the rest of the century. It's less common today, but one will still see today's oldest manumku, or elderly, get onto the dance floor when the DJ plays a jitterbug tune.
We've been listening to Assistant Professor of History and Micronesian Studies from the University of Guam, Robert R. Clement Jr., present his paper, Militarization and Music, Stories of Cross-Cultural Encounters in Guam and Saipan During World War II and the Early Post-War Years. We'll be back with more after this break.
Hafa Day, this is Eulalia Villagomez of the Northern Marianas Humanities Council. Did you know that you can donate up to $5,000 to the Humanities Council through the CNMI Education Tax Credit Program? Donations from individuals and corporations qualify and can be used to offset your local wage and salary tax, BGRT, and earnings tax. Call our office at 235-4785 to see how you can support humanities programs in our community and obtain a tax credit for your donation. Thank you, and Sisus Masi.
Welcome back to Your Humanities Half Hour. Our speaker today is Michael R. Clement Jr., Assistant Professor of History and Micronesian Studies at the University of Guam. He presented the paper we're covering today at the one-day conference held in conjunction with the 70th anniversary of the battles of Saipan and Tinian earlier this year. The conference was entitled Cultures in War, Combatants, Islanders, and Settlers in the Pacific War and Afterward. Clement's paper is entitled Militarization and Music, Stories of Cross-Cultural Encounters in Guam and Saipan During World War II and the Early Post-War Years.
No style of music from the era, however, would have a bigger impact on Chamorro music throughout the Marianas than American country. In fact, during my research, I interviewed dozens of Chamorro artists and fans, and the only music people seemed to associate with Armed Forces Radio was American country. I was actually quite surprised to learn upon reading the programming schedules of AFRS in the late 1940s that country music was only featured for a few hours each day. But there is definite significance in the fact that the station is remembered as a country music station. Country music's heavy presence on Armed Forces Radio during these years was a novel development in American music history that was directly related to an ongoing cultural transformation in the mainland United States. The Great Depression and World War II had set in motion a mass migration of rural people out of agricultural areas in the American South as tenant farming collapsed and families were drawn by the thousands into shipyards and defense plants in the South, Midwest, and West Coast. Of course, military service also drew Americans out of rural enclaves. Military service also drew Americans out of rural enclaves. Country music historian Bill Malone writes that young Southerners, many of whom had scarcely been more than a few miles from the place they were born, marched off to training centers, carrying their musical tastes with them. Barrack rooms reverberated with the sounds of guitars, lonesome rural voices, and the current hillbilly songs. Ultimately, they carried this music all over the world, including the Marianas. During the decade between 1945 and 1955, country music began to express new social messages as rural Americans adapted to life in urban environments where they confronted the competing value systems of a more complex and rapidly changing world. For Chamorros who were undergoing a similar, although in many ways even more complex struggle, adapting to the post-war American version of liberal, secular, capitalist modernity, the music seemed to tell their story, and they proceeded to make it their own. This would be especially true in the villages of southern Guam and in the northern Marianas, where Chamorro language and culture were perpetuated more systematically, and so the conflict with modernity was felt even more acutely. Country music historian George Lewis characterizes the genre during these years as a battlefield of cultural conflict and contradiction, triggered by the country music audience's engagement with social change. Songs about hardship, longing for a simpler time, the declining influence of religion in society, and various ways in which morality seemed to be breaking down held particular appeal for Chamorro listeners. Chamorro translations and adaptations of these early tunes, as well as later country hits, were perpetuated in informal settings throughout the 1950s and 60s. Adaptations and translations of country songs were often passed down to the next generation. When Chamorros began recording adaptations in the 1970s, many would be based on country songs of the early post-war years. In light of the centrality of the Chamorro mother in culture for centuries, Chamorro songs that praise them have an air of timelessness. But in reality, Chamorro songs such as Nanan Mami and dozens of others recorded by Chamorro musicians since the 70s were undoubtedly influenced by the mother songs that proliferated in country music as never before in the period between 1945 and 1955. Hank Snow's 1945 hit, My Mother, was one of the first of these songs that gained national popularity and was intensely familiar to post-war Chamorros. Both Chamorro and American versions of these types of songs recount the struggle that comes as people with large families and cultures adapted to agrarian societies struggle to feed and guide their children in an unfamiliar cash-based consumer economy. Country music historian Bill Malone notes that mother praise songs reaffirmed the system of values that defined the older rural society and virtually deified the woman who had been the moral cornerstone of a vanishing world. In Chamorro songs, this would be articulated as a tension between costumbrin Chamorro, or Chamorro customs, and costumbrin Americano, which is American culture. Even if it was American country songs that provided the model. When Chamorros began recording, country songs and Chamorro songs about suffering were not restricted to stories of mothers. Among the most popular Chamorro songs about hardship is the Charfers Brothers 1972 recording, Ipebli, or The Poor Man. The song's music is original and the lyrics are arguably original as well. But the general theme of the song and several key lyrics are based on Hank Snow's 1956 song, These Hands, the story of a man who struggled his whole life and asked God not to judge him for his poverty. And yet, for writer Jesus Charfres, the song was a true representation of the life of his father, who had always been a poor farmer in the pre-war and Japanese era, and worked as a sanitation worker in the early post-war years. He probably is one of many Chamorro songs that mirrors Snow's imagery of hands, calloused and old, or in Chamorro, kadzus zan umku, and variations on that theme, common in country music, of hands and bodies worn out from a life of manual labor. These examples are just a sampling of Chamorro interpretations of American country songs that seem to express shared sentiments regarding the social transformation that was occurring during these years. Analysis of gender dynamics, the breakdown of various customary Chamorro values, and the decline of Chamorro language and cultural traditions, and numerous songs about problems in personal relationships are all areas where one can find connections with American country songs. Of course, one of the primary themes in country music is that of longing for life in the countryside, a simple, idealized version of life that is out of reach in a modern world. World War II launched both Guam and rural America into a new era of irreversible social change and created an environment of cross-cultural interactions that changed life in the Marianas and the world forever. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today for this presentation by Michael R. Clement, Jr., Assistant Professor of History and Micronation Studies at the University of Guam. He's been looking at a under-examined aspect of World War II and its immediate aftermath, and as far as the impact of the thousands of military men who passed through the Mariana Islands and the musical culture that they brought with them. We hope you've enjoyed our discussion today. This has been Your Humanities Half Hour. I'm Catherine Perry.
This program was supported by a We the People grant awarded to the Northern Marianas Humanities Council from the National Endowment for the Humanities. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities or the Northern Marianas Humanities Council.